The use of uranium munitions in war is going to cause cancers, respiratory, eye problems, neurological problems in the children of Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait.
The United States has insisted on putting forth this very aggressive policy and saying we alone have the right to threaten to nuke you if you even think about acquiring nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons.
Jeanette Rankin said, "There will be war as long as we have secret international relations and governments that protect special economic privileges."
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Friday, August 22nd, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Bush administration today froze the assets of six senior Hamas leaders and five European-based organizations. It says raise money for the radical Palestinian group. President Bush said he was taking the action because of Tuesday's suicide attack on a packed bus in Jerusalem that killed 20 people, including six children. Hamas claimed responsibility. A senior administration official speaking on condition of anonymity said it was the first effort to block Hamas's assets or funding sources outside the United States. Similar action has been taken worldwide against al-Qaeda and other terrorist networks. However, the Jerusalem bombing launched a new round of Mideast violence. Israel has marked Palestinian militant leaders for death and will step up targeted killings unless Palestinian leaders rein in the armed group, officials said today, while insisting they have not abandoned a stricken U.S.-backed roadmap peace plan. In the Gaza Strip, tens of thousands of Hamas supporters buried a leader killed in an Israeli missile strike Thursday and vowed revenge. The group's defiant leaders said they did not fear death and that a new generation was ready to take their places. U.S. investigators suspect the bombing of the U.N. headquarters in Baghdad was an inside job and are questioning Iraqi employees and guards, many of whom were linked to Saddam Hussein's security service, a top American official said. Bernard Kirik, the former New York police commissioner who is working to reestablish an Iraqi police force, said the placement of the truck bomb and the timing of Tuesday's attack had raised suspicions. Both the war in Iraq and war in Afghanistan provided a stage for the display and trial of new military weapons and weapon technologies on the part of the Pentagon. Earlier this week, the British journal New Scientist published a report about development of a new weapon that would utilize gamma rays to blur the lines between conventional and nuclear weapons. Peace Watch spoke about this weapon with Jacqueline Cabasso, executive director of the Western States Legal Foundation and co-author of a new report in the Journal of Social Justice entitled "The End of Disarmament and the Arms Races to Come."
The way it would work is that it would store up a great deal of energy in a very small package. So a relatively small warhead would be able to deliver an explosion with a much, much higher yield than a conventional weapon in that same size package. And when the bomb detonated, it would actually, in addition to the explosive blast, it would emit gamma rays, which would kill anybody within some circumference. And then there would be radioactive fallout as well. I would imagine that the proponents of this, should it get farther along, would claim that it wasn't a nuclear weapon, but I think we should consider it a nuclear weapon. But what's interesting, really, is that this is just sort of the tip of the iceberg. Every once in a while, it comes to light that there's research going on in one or another of these exotic high-tech weapons. But the reality is that there's a massive program underway in the United States to upgrade every nuclear weapon type in the existing arsenal, in many cases giving them enhanced or specialized military capabilities. There are programs underway to research and develop new kinds of nuclear weapons and other kinds of high-tech conventional weapons, including, very importantly, upgrades to accuracy and delivery systems that would enable conventional weapons to be delivered by nuclear weapon systems. Again, blurring the distinction between nuclear and conventional. So really the thing that we should be concerned about is not that this speculative kind of science fiction gamma ray bomb might be developed, although that's certainly something of concern, but that there's this whole massive military revolution going on, if you will, a revolution in military technology, as it's sometimes called, which is part and parcel of a very aggressive and unilateral U.S. Military policy in which the United States reserves to itself the right to basically strike any time, anywhere, for any reason that it deems to be in its so-called national security interest.
So it sounds like you're saying we're right here on the threshold of a whole new era of new weaponry and a far more aggressive use of this weaponry.
One of the most dangerous trends that's going on now is that nuclear weapons use is being explicitly contemplated at the highest levels in all of the national security policy documents that are coming out of the White House. And part of that involves, for example, expanding the role of Strategic Command in Omaha, Nebraska, which historically has had responsibility for nuclear war planning, and now expanding their portfolio to include conventional weapons as well. So again, they've got this spectrum of weapons to choose from. Mm. The Nuclear Posture Review, which came out last year, took the old strategic triad, which is the nuclear weapons triad of submarine-launched ballistic missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and strategic bombers, and took that whole category, put them into one corner of a new strategic triad, which it calls offensive strike capabilities, and expands, again, the range of weapons there to include new kinds of conventional high-tech, high-precision weapons and new kinds of nuclear weapons with lower yields and other characteristics. So there's this kind of seamless continuum of offensive firepower available to U.S. Warfighters. And then the second leg of the new strategic triad is the so-called defenses, which we are told publicly, oh, this is to protect the United States from some kind of bolt from the blue attack from someplace else with a missile. But really, it's not about that at all. It's about protecting forward-deployed U.S. military forces or U.S. bases or anything they consider to be U.S. strategic interests, so that basically you've got these so-called defensive systems operating hand-in-hand with the offensive systems like so many swords and shields. And then the third leg of this new strategic triad is the research and development infrastructure. Centerpiece of that is the nuclear weapons laboratories, Los Alamos, Lawrence, Livermore, and Sandia, and the Air Force laboratories, which is where this gamma ray bomb is being researched and so on. So you've actually elevated the research and development infrastructure to a leg of the new strategic triad. You've increased its prestige and its funding. They're researching all kinds of concepts to supply both the offensive strike capabilities and the defenses. And basically, people forget to ask the question, what is all this for and what is it all about? And again, well, it's to allow the U.S. to project overwhelming military force for whatever reason it wants, anytime, anywhere.
It does indeed prompt the question, just what was wrong with the weapons of the past? I mean, the U.S. already has by far the largest military budget and most sophisticated weapons in the world. And President Bush requested from Congress an unprecedented $399 billion for the military for fiscal year 2004, which is a 4% increase from this year.
It's larger than the military budgets of the next 26 countries combined.
Why the need for new technologies?
That's a really good question, because it's very important. You correctly point out the U.S. has, for example, in its nuclear arsenal alone, a permanent arsenal, what it considers to be basically a permanent arsenal, of over 10,000 nuclear weapons with enough firepower to basically destroy, you know, every city in the former Soviet Union, for example. But a lot of those weapons have very high yields, and they have been deemed to be the political calculations involved in their use suggest that they cannot really be used without creating tremendous upheaval and backlash. So there's this constant quest for more usable weaponry which we are told will be more precise, which we are told will cause less collateral damage, meaning civilian casualties. That's all really very illusory, but I think it's part and parcel of the ideology that is manifested by the Bush administration currently, in which there is this just absolutely unchecked drive for power, where there is this ideological belief that we are the good guys, we are right, they are wrong, might makes right, and so on and so forth. And I think it's kind of part of a ideological package of pure power projection. And also, of course, there are corporate beneficiaries.
At this point, are other countries beside the U.S. developing and researching such weapons?
Yes, to some extent. Not, of course, to the extent that the United States is, because the United States has insisted on putting forth this very aggressive policy and saying we alone have the right to threaten to nuke you if you even think about acquiring nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons. Other countries are responding in kind. So first of all, the other official recognized nuclear weapon states, Russia, France, the United Kingdom, and China, all have nuclear arsenals and nuclear weapons programs. Russia is going much along the same lines as the United States. But I must say Russia has been following the lead of the United States. What Russia has been doing has been in response to moves by the United States, and similarly to some extent with China. Britain is basically a subsidiary of the United States when it comes to nuclear research and development. You've got other countries, the countries that the United States has called the axis of evil, including North Korea and Iran, both of which have at least nuclear weapons capabilities, and both of which the United States is very much accusing of developing nuclear weapons. You've also got a nuclear arms race going on between India and Pakistan, which isn't getting much attention now, but which may be the most dangerous of all, because those two countries, which are enemies, are reenacting both the rhetoric and the technology development of the U.S.-Soviet Cold War, and they have... And they're involved in a nuclear standoff with a very long common border. And then you've also got Israel, which nobody ever talks about. Israel has a very advanced nuclear weapons program and is believed to have a nuclear arsenal of something like 300 nuclear warheads. This is certainly a factor in the Middle East in terms of the trying to find some kind of solution for regional security. People often forget that in the 1991 resolution, UN Security Council resolution, which sent the weapons inspectors into Iraq, there was also a commitment to work for a weapons of mass destruction free zone in the Middle East that includes Israel's nuclear arsenal.
You've already said that Pakistan and India are involved in an arms race, but do you foresee all of this research and development potentially prompting a new arms race between the U.S., Russia, France, U.K., China, North Korea?
Well, things are certainly very volatile right now. There's no question that the United States is way out ahead in terms of its military technology development, but as long as the United States continues to set up enemies, it's easy to forget that before we got bogged down in Iraq, seemed to be focusing on China as an enemy, that there is going to be an incentive for other countries to want to keep up. There are two reasons for that. Either countries are going to feel legitimately threatened by the United States, and I think that North Korea is a good example of a country that has every right to feel legitimately threatened by the United States. Americans don't know that in 1993, the Clinton administration was planning a preemptive strike on North Korea's nuclear reactors. Not a nuclear strike, a conventional strike. And that was averted only through the intervention of the president of South Korea. North Korea is listed as one of the axis of evil countries. In the Nuclear Post Review, there are contingency plans explained for nuclear use in case of a North Korean attack on South Korea, and it doesn't specify a nuclear attack, or in case of a military confrontation over the status of Taiwan, and that would be a military confrontation between the United States and China. Mm. So you have countries that either feel threatened by the United States and feel that they need to defend themselves. And I'm not saying that any country should have nuclear weapons to defend itself. So I just want to make that very clear. But there is a certain crazy logic to this in the world as it is today. The other reason is that if the most powerful military force that has ever existed in the history of the planet, which is the United States, insists, demands that it has to have this huge military budget, that it has the right to threaten to preemptively strike other countries in order to protect itself, if it's going to do all of this, if it's going to have this huge nuclear arsenal, this massive research and development program into new high-tech weapons to defend its national security, quote-unquote, then other countries are going to figure that they need to defend their national security, and that is a recipe for endless arms racing and endless wars and endless death and destruction.
Jacqueline Cabasso is Executive Director of the Western States Legal Foundation and co-author of the new report, The End of Disarmament and the Arms Races to Come.
New technology.
Killed, and that's because a lot of money went into high technology weaponry.
After all, billions of dollars have been diverted from peaceful uses.
People have to realize how impressive it is.
E-52 struck eye cluster bombs.
These and other weapons are bringing smiles to their supporters.
The type of Patriot that was fired cost $1.2 million.
E-52 strike terror into troops as they get high marks in the war in the Gulf.
The townspeople.
The Scud missile cost $1 million.
These and other weapons are bringing
collateral damage and so on.
As they get high marks in the war in the Gulf.
We're talking about $2.5 million worth of garbage up there.
Now all our televisions are manufactured in Japan. When you see the smart bomb go down the chimney over there, we say, well, by God, we did that at least.
In southern Iraq, there are a lot less targets than there were before.
130 people were killed in the raid on Fallujah.
This has been fantastically accurate.
Collateral damage and so on.
Little bit of a congratulatory mood around the Pentagon.
Civilian casualties during an Allied air raid on Baghdad.
The townspeople want revenge.
130 people were killed.
This has been fantastically accurate.
Ask President Bush, how can he kill our beautiful children?
The townspeople.
Ask President Bush, how can he kill our beautiful children?
The townspeople.
Ask President Bush.
The president's not going to answer that question because it is one of the key questions.
Chris Burke, New Technologies on Trial.
Hi, my name is Benta Brooklyn, and I'm a production assistant for Peace Watch. I believe Peace Watch is an important program because it covers news and current affairs from a fresh and enlightening perspective. We need your support in order to continue. Please make a financial commitment by visiting our secure website at pacifica.org. Or you may send us a tax-exempt donation via check or money order. Address to Peace Watch, Pacifica, 2390, that's 2390, Champlain Street, Northwest Washington, D.C., 20009. Thank you so much for your support. Keep listening and tell your friends.
One of the more deadly weapons that's been used in recent wars is depleted uranium. During the first Persian Gulf War, the United States and Britain fired 320 tons of DU ammunition, and CNN reports that between 1 and 2,000 more tons were used during this most recent war. Critics say an inordinate number of children exposed to DU, even years later, develop cancer, and many are born with birth defects. The Pentagon says DU poses no danger to civilians. Independent radio producer Reese Ehrlich recently visited southern Iraq and former Yugoslavia to find out what impact depleted uranium may have on children of war.
Dr. Asad Issa, chief resident of the Children's and Maternity Hospital in Basra, walks down the corridor to the cancer ward, where a little girl sits with her mother on the floor.
Yeah, what kind of cancer does she have?
She has an abdominal tumor, the neuroblastoma. By the kidney.
Oh, okay. A tumor near the kidney. How old is she?
This little girl lives in an area where depleted uranium ammunition was fired during the Gulf War. The U.S. and Britain use such ammunition because it's heavier and stronger than lead, so it's highly effective slicing through enemy armor. But when the DU hits a hard target, it creates a small radioactive fireball. Pulverized dust can enter the air, soil, and water, and it remains radioactive for billions of years. Iraqi doctors blame many childhood cancers and birth defects on the use of depleted uranium.
There is no changes in Iraq situations and Iraqi conditions except the war. And what happened in the war was that the Iraq bombed by using of the weapons that's containing depleted uranium. It is one of the major factors for development of malignancies.
Iraqi doctors report a fourfold increase in birth defects since the end of the Gulf War and a similar rise in childhood cancers. Doctors in former Yugoslavia, where the U.S. also used DU, have discovered similar problems. Doctors in Iraq say they don't have the equipment or drugs to properly treat the patients.
Now, in the case of the daughter here, what do you think her prognosis is?
A poor prognosis, because we have no medicine.
She will die.
Yes.
The allegations that this is from the Gulf War do not seem to be credible.
Dr. Michael Kilpatrick is second in command of the Pentagon's department dealing with Gulf War illnesses. He acknowledges serious medical problems exist among Iraqi children, but says DU doesn't harm civilians because the fine dust doesn't disperse very far. Dr. Kilpatrick says the cancers and birth defects may, in fact, have been caused by poison gas used during the Iran-Iraq War.
Some of this population during the Iran-Iraq War was exposed to mustard agent. We know that mustard agent can cause cancers in children born of people who are exposed. That would have to be understood and researched to better understand if that is a possible cause of some of the disease or illness being seen.
But that's not what another military expert says. Major Doug Rocky, now retired, was in charge of cleaning up American tanks hit by DU during the Gulf War, casualties of friendly fire. He says the DU dust got blown far away by the wind and entered the soil and water supply. Dr. Rocky, who holds a PhD in physics, says many of the men in his cleanup crew developed the same kinds of cancers seen among Iraqi children.
The first member of our staff that developed cancer, he was sleeping in the first tent downwind of the site where I collected all of the contaminated equipment. This is in Saudi Arabia. He developed cancer in the larynx and the throat area within 9 months because he was breathing in the dust, which we know goes tremendous distances. And then the first cancers, the lung cancers, developed within 2 years in our staff, and the first deaths were fairly rapidly.
Dr. Rocky says depleted uranium poses a particular danger for children because their young bodies are more vulnerable. DU is both radioactive and a toxic heavy metal. Children who breathe or even eat a small amount can be affected. He says it may well cause serious health problems in years to come.
In no circumstances should the citizens of the world allow the use of uranium munitions. The use of uranium munitions in war is going to cause cancers, respiratory, eye problems, neurological problems in the children of Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait.
While something is terribly wrong with the children of southern Iraq, no one has conducted a thorough epidemiological study that links the problems directly to DU. Even critics of U.S. policy concede that the use of poison gas or heavy air pollution could also be causing health problems. That's why developments in former Yugoslavia are so intriguing. The U.S. also used DU ammunition in the Bosnia and Kosovo wars. Pediatricians in Sarajevo now report a five-fold increase in childhood leukemia. Dr. Nada Setzmil-Saric is a medical oncologist who treats Bosnian families who live near a bridge hit by DU ammunition in 1994.
This bridge has been completely destroyed since the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina. 8 years after this, we observed some families who live just near, quite close to this bridge. The increase in leukemias in childhood really exists.
Dr. Setzmil-Saric also reports a 5 to 6-fold increase in breast cancer, which is not known to be caused by DU. So, as in Iraq, there may be a number of other factors at work. But the governments of Serbia and Montenegro aren't waiting for the conclusive scientific proof. They're taking steps now to clean up the depleted uranium and protect their children. Here in Cape Arza, a spectacularly beautiful area just south of Dubrovnik along the Adriatic coast, U.S. planes fired DU ammunition in the closing days of the Kosovo War. The DU remains buried in the soil. Physicist Tomislav Andelic is in charge of removing the DU, along with all the contaminated soil. Men with chainsaws cut down the trees and brush. And Delic runs a Geiger counter over the ground until he finds a bullet fragment.
Now it means that we found the bullet.
This is one larger fragment. Here, you can see that he is destroyed. When he hit the stone, he broke itself. But if you see, there is a lot of little particles oxidizing, which is real, real danger.
The DU is dangerous because, as it decomposes, the dust can fly into the air or seep into the water table. Children handling the fragments on the surface could face serious health problems, says Dr. Andelic, now speaking in Serbo-Croatian.
Somebody may come in the future, spread a tent, and endanger his life if the area is not cleaned up. There's also the possibility that children, out of curiosity, could find a uranium bullet and take it into their hands. Then we would face a big problem.
The Serbian government also plans to clean up 5 sites on its territory where DU was used during the Kosovo War, at a cost of about $400,000 for each site. Dr. Andelic, entering a shed where the DU fragments are stored, says no one in the international community will help.
If any country or any organization recognized the need for cleaning up depleted uranium, it would automatically mean that they recognize the danger coming from using DU. If this happened, we could seek damages in court, and nobody is ready to accept that.
While the Pentagon continues to insist that DU poses no danger to children and other civilians, the Marines and Navy say they have replaced DU with other kinds of ammo, and the Air Force plans to do the same. That could help the children of future wars, but it is of little solace to those in Iraq and former Yugoslavia. I'm Reese Ehrlich in Cape Arza, Montenegro.
Reese Ehrlich is the co-author with Norman Solomon of Target Iraq, What the News Media Didn't Tell You. His report, Hidden Killers, was recently chosen as one of the top 10 most censored stories in America by Project Censored. It appeared as part of a public radio special, Children of War, Fighting, Dying, Surviving, produced in association with KQED Public Radio and made possible by the Stanley Foundation. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. It's your financial support that makes this show possible, so if you're enjoying it, we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org. We'll be back in a moment.